Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time you are listening to this. Wherever you are listening to this, this is Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk. How are you guys? Happy Valentine's Day, happy Lent, happy post-Mardi Gras, and happy Ash Wednesday, whatever, wherever, whomever, whatever you guys celebrate, it's all good today, because today we are talking about old school wrestling. This is episode 42. To every season, and we are going to get into the action with March 1983 of the Mid-South Wrestling Association. Big, big changes coming down the pike, and as you guys know, it's been a little stagnant. I was thinking again about where does the Silver Era end? And as you guys know, if you're longtime listeners, I always say that the Golden Era of Mid-South is from the day that Jim Cornette arrives until the day that Bob Sweetan returns, which is the end of 1983 to about mid-1985. And the Silver Era is the Ted DiBiase turn from June of 1982 until question mark. And then the golden, the Bronze Era is the Freebirds versus JYD and all the aftermath of the blinding stuff. And I say that with an asterisk only because, you know, most of us have not watched that episodically back in 1980. We've seen a few highlights. We've seen a few interviews here and there. Maybe we have a partial episode from 1981 or a partial episode from 1980 that we get to watch. But by and large, the first 2 years of Mid-South Wrestling, 2.5 years of Mid-South Wrestling are not available, you know, episode by episode the way that we'd like to see them. So that's my caveat on when, you know, why the Freebird era is the Bronze era, as opposed to a bigger era. But they're all pretty close. They're all very good. And then there's little lulls in between, as we know. And for Mid-South in the Silver Era, I do really question, you know, does it end when Stagger Lee shows up and beats DiBiase for the title? Does it end when we have this little lull in January, February, where it looks like a small crew? And, you know, some of the enhancement guys are getting wins on TV and being positioned more prominently, which again, you know, as I've been talking about for months, is something that everybody complains about at the end of 1983 in Mid-South before we get to the Jim Cornette era. So, you know, we've talked about who is the booker. Is it Ernie Ladd? When is Ernie Ladd coming and going in this era? But, you know, the more I think about it, even though there is this little lull in the Rat Pack, and we'll get to it in just a minute, I think that it is the Rat Pack era. And so, you know, the Silver Era really, to me, probably ends when Olympia, you know, takes a powder and goes back to Alabama, when DiBiase loses the Loser Leave Town to Hacksaw Duggan and goes back to Georgia. And suddenly this really hot, mostly hot, you know, pretty hot Rat Pack era is over and DiBiase is gone. And, you know, now we have Duggan established as a new fan favorite, number two, number three, depending on where you're looking, how you're measuring JYD and Mr. Wrestling 2 in this era. In any event, we will get to all of that in just a minute. But let me say, as I always do, that Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk is brought to you by me, Greg Klein, and my published works. Now, numbered three of them. And I'm so excited, as you guys know, we've been talking about this for a long time now, about 7 or 8 months since I announced it on Mark Cole's show, and I'd been teasing it for a few months before that, but my first collection of plays has been published. It's called Sunset Painting and the Sun, two plays by Greg Klein. Sunset Painting is the story about me taking care of my grandmother at the end of her life when I was in my mid to late 20s, into my 30s, and it really is a heartfelt tale. As I said last time, you know, that Quentin Tarantino meme, make it so personal that it makes you uncomfortable to share. It's kind of where I am. I brought a copy to my mom the other day at the nursing home. And I was like, all right, you've heard this before. You were at the reading, so this shouldn't shock you. But just in case, I hope that, you know, you're okay with everything that I wrote. And, you know, by and large, everybody else has passed on, my aunt, my grandmother. So there's, you know, I worry about, like, what am I saying about my family? But also, I really do think that I'm speaking from a position of honesty about addiction and about sibling rivalry and about the problems that people have with their parents and the problems that then get passed down to their children. And, you know, if you know anything about my upbringing, you know that I'm probably pretty qualified to talk about these sort of things. But in any event, so that's the first play. And the second play is The Sun. It opened 20 years ago. I think last time I said it was the KGB Theater. It's actually the Crane Theater and the KGB Bar. And it's on East 4th Street in the East Village. And it was a great time, except for the love triangle, which I lost. And the fact that, you know, basically a equity 99-seat theater contract is guaranteed so that you're not allowed to make money on the project. So I wish I had known a few of those things ahead of time. But other than that, it's a newsroom drama. It's about a young intern from Harvard who is slumming at a small-town newspaper in Hagerstown, Maryland, because he wants to find out the truth about his dad's political career and why his dad left politics. And to do so, he has to track down the would-be Woodward and Bernstein who broke the big scoop 20 years earlier. And it's filled with twists and turns about this intern and his motives and the two reporters and their motives. A lot of ripped from today's headlines about bias in the media and the differences between liberal reporters and conservative reporters and how both exist and how neither one necessarily is coming from a perspective of objective truth. And so, like I said, there's a lot that sort of seems ripped from the headlines, including the destruction of newspapers by corporations and pension funds and hedge funds and investment funds and take your pick. In any event, two plays by Greg Klein, Sunset Painting and The Sun. It's available on Amazon now, as well as my other published works, The King of New Orleans, The Biography of the Junkyard Dog, and The Paper Tigers, the untold true story about how eight guys from the streets of Philadelphia became professional baseball players for one day, which is historic fiction about a real situation in 1912 when Ty Cobb climbed up into the stands and nearly killed a crippled fan and the aftermath of the strike that took place when he was suspended. As I said, all of my works are available on Amazon. I have copies right now of The Paper Tigers and two plays by Greg Klein. So if you want to get them directly from me, if you want to get them autographed, please reach out. I have PayPal and Cash App. And so it's really easy to do a transaction, have me send them to you. Both books for $40, signed, sealed, mailed, or each one for $20. So let me know. And thank you guys for your support. Let us get to the wrestling action as we talk about Mid-South Wrestling Association in March of 1983. We start with episode 182. It was taped in Shreveport on March 2nd and then airs sometime after that, beginning about the 4th or 5th. I looked at the weekend. I think the taping was on a Wednesday. So 3rd, 4th, 5th, the 5th of March is about when it starts, and then it depends, obviously, on the bicycle and where you are in the loop. It's, again, a little light in terms of matches. They still seem to be with a little bit of a shadow crew compared to what it was like in the, you know, back in 1982. And again, I wonder if they were worried that they were burning out their crowds, which sometimes we definitely saw they were, as crowds would leave at the end of the second hour once the big match was over, or crowds would get really dead at the end of the second hour if there was too much action going on. So instead, we start with a feel-good story, a news story, as we learn about Junkyard Dog Day in DeRidder, which is on the other side of Lake Charles. I think, sort of the east side of Lake Charles. What we would think of in New Orleans is like one of the river parishes, you know, kind of up north of New Orleans, south of Shreveport, in the middle, you know, on all those two-lane roads that Jim Cornette and all the others talk about how hard it was to get north and south in Louisiana back in the day. Because you could get, you know, anywhere on Route 10 or Route 20 east-west, but Route 20 ran through Shreveport, Route 10 ran through New Orleans and Baton Rouge, and you really couldn't get north and south. You know, like 55 didn't exist and those kind of highways back in the day. So that is what we start with. And it's a really, like I said, it's a feel-good story. It's like, this is an elementary school honoring the Junkyard Dog. He's back. There's news clips. They do an interview with him. You know, he talks about, I don't know, just all the sort of babyface things that you would expect, you know, your lead face to say to a bunch of young kids. And it was just, I just thought it was really sweet. And I do note, and I've talked about this before too, Sylvester Ritter looks really good here at the beginning of 1983. We talked about him in 1982. He looks incredible. He rivals Tony Atlas in terms of the way that his body looks. And, you know, as my joke goes, and then by 1988, he looks like Pez Watley. But at the beginning of 1983, he's still looking really good. And I think that, you know, as you guys know, somewhere in this year is where the transition begins, where the drug use takes hold a little too much, where personal life catches up with him, where he's, you know, killing his emotions, so to speak, with drugs, not focusing on the things that are going wrong in his life, but focusing on the things that are, you know, bringing him pleasure and bringing him satisfaction. And that is addiction in a nutshell, right? In any event, like I said, at this point, he's still looking really good, and it's a great clip. And it's really interesting to see, you know, how, in some ways, you know, like the Jim Cornette saying, how can I miss you if you don't go away? In some ways, and I don't know if this was the same for Jimmy Valiant or for Dusty Rhodes, but I think the Stagger Lee stuff actually did work in a way as a Junkyard Dog isn't here. Even though, clearly, most of the time, it is Sylvester Ritter under the mask. Just the very nature of not having the character Junkyard Dog there, not having everything focus around Junkyard Dog, not having the name out there in the press. You know, by the time he gets back in January, the crowd is insane for him, and they're still, it's very limited. You know, you're seeing clips of him, you're seeing interviews, occasionally you see a match, but it really is sort of like a slow build to get him back. So it ends up being 90 days, and then there's like almost like a 30-day on top of that where we're talking about, is Stagger Lee coming back next week, Stagger Lee, and then we get the belt back. There's no Stagger Lee. You know, this goes on into February, as we talked about, and it's really March when they start to sort of roll JYD back out as a headline attraction. And, you know, I think that it really worked. I think that the fans missed him. His name was out of the headlines, at least, even though, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, we knew that it was him. And now he's back, and people are just going crazy. You know, as we talked about with Tony Atlas, they were chanting for JYD. And in March of 83, the fans are just, you know, it's like a love affair all over again. They've got their favorite back. He looks good. He's wrestling well. And the fans are really, really into it. Next up, we have a great big recap about Mr. Wrestling 2, and we see that there is now a Mr. Wrestling 2, I guess you'd say, hung in effigy on the ropes, like a little, another, you know, almost like a voodoo doll or Mr. Wrestling 2 doll. And they recap the entire end of 1982 with the Loser Leave Town match and Mr. Wrestling 2 confronting Kamala and Skandar Akbar. And then two getting the better of them, you know, getting the better of Kamala, really one of the first times we've seen anybody get the better of Kamala. But as he goes to take the mask off of Friday, Friday holds him in place and Kamala splashes two from the top rope, which of course leads to Olympia substituting for two in the Loser Leave Town match. And then Olympia dropping the fall and having to leave for 60 days. And as we've talked about, this is an angle that they have been working on. We're really going on like the sixth month, I think, of this angle, like from October of last year, of just teasing it and a little bit and a little bit. And then Olympia leaves and it stops for a week, but then we get something else, but it's mailed. And it's like, it just, I bet people were figuring it out. I think people were figuring it out. This is right before my time and it would have been 12. So I don't know, but you know, just from watching for 5-6 months, it feels like a lot of these storylines that they develop, you kind of suspect what's going to happen, but you don't know for sure. And there's twists and turns. And, you know, it's the finding out that's sort of part of the fun. It's the getting there. And you tune in each week to see a new little bit of information. And they're really, really good at this point. They're cranking it up. And we'll see this as it develops, really, again, you know, it's already been 5 months, but even this month is a very slow build to what will happen, you know, in the next month and in the spring. Next up, we finally get a match. It's Kendo Nagasaki against Jerry Caldwell. And Kendo wins with a, you know, they call it the thrush kick. It's about to be the super kick. It's actually really good. For all my, you know, I don't know what you'd say, my dislike of Kendo. I don't even think it's dislike. He's just not my favorite gimmick. It does seem like a little bit of a ripoff of Kabuki. They brought in Kabuki, then Kabuki's gone, and they bring in Kendo to replace him. But actually, his moves are pretty good. The thrusts, the chops, the super kick, all top-notch. And it's a very quick match, as you can imagine. And we're still, you know, Kendo won't have a long run here, but we're still really building him up in March as this new foreign power. Next up, Ted DiBiase and Ron Ellis. DiBiase wins with a figure four. Again, a little bit of a filler match or a placeholder match. You know, I suspect that this is not a go-home television episode, as you guys will see in the next couple of weeks. Next up, we have Mr. Wrestling 2, Tiger Conway Jr. against Kelly Kanisky and Ron Kessler. And it's really, I thought that, you know, for all my criticism of Conway in the last few weeks, I thought it was a pretty good match, except when Ron Kessler is in there with Conway and they really badly mess up the finish to the point where Conway just basically decides to pin the guy. Like, the move doesn't come off. And so Conway just kind of rolls him over and pins him. And it was very, very awkward. Not Fantastic's debut in Mid-South awkward, but for a new team that you're pushing, it was not a great match. Although, as I said, I think a lot of that was Kessler, who seems to be pretty green and not really kind of working with the flow of the match. Next up, we have Mr. Olympia, who has returned. And it's interesting, he's fighting Matt Bourne in his first match back. And Bill Watts, who's on color commentary, talks about how Olympia got an unpaid vacation and how nobody wants the unpaid vacation. They talk a lot about Hacksaw Duggan and, you know, talk about episodic television and storylines developing over time. We are now essentially into a Hacksaw Duggan tweener month where it's kind of clear, you know, where this is going, but we're going to play it out week by week, angle by angle, interview by interview. And, you know, Duggan's almost doing the Jaime Lannister, for those of you that are Game of Thrones fans. I was at one point, and then by the end I wasn't. But, you know, I always thought that Jaime was not really supposed to be a hero. He was supposed to be a tweener. And when it got a little too much like Jaime's being noble, they had to make him do something evil so that fans would get, you know, sort of on the right side of him again. But it didn't work. Like, people would just complain, how could they make Jaime Lannister do something evil? And I'm like, you guys remember when this whole thing started and he pushed a kid out the window? Like, he's not supposed to be the good guy in this story. Anyway, at this point, you know, I think they know that Hacksaw Duggan is going to be the good guy in this story, but they're teasing it and they're making it go slow. And so we'll see week by week as Hacksaw begins to develop this personality of this, you know, pro-American babyface who doesn't like Skandar Akbar and his foreign menaces. Anyway, Olympia wins this match by DQ and DiBiase interferes. And it's funny because they call the DQ and then somehow Olympia gets the pin anyway. There's a roll-up. It ends up, you know, the typical, like, Bourne crashes into DiBiase, then an elbow drop and pin. And, again, they do this in Mid-South every once in a while. I'm not quite sure why they counted the pin after they'd already called for the disqualification. But sometimes, the referee is just like, okay, why not? Might as well go with it. So that's what they do here. Not a bad match. It was fun. But it really, again, you know, we're really just teasing what's about to come. And you guys will see in the next few weeks. And then we end up with a little bit of a end of the episode filler match as Marty Lundy and Tim Horner go to a draw as the time runs out. So only five matches, not a ton of action this week. We do find out that next week we're going to have a non-title match between Mr. Wrestling 2 and Tiger Conway Jr. against DiBiase and Bourne. And then we're also going to have Mr. Wrestling 2, and we're going to see something from Houston. And we're going to have Hacksaw Duggan. And then in 2 weeks, they talk about King Kong Bundy, Killer Brooks, the Super Destroyer, and the Superdome Super Show, and what's going to be in New Orleans next time we come there. So that is episode 182. Not a bad, you know, episode, but again, filler, probably not the go-home episode. The next episode is 183, obviously. It airs, you know, a week later, 312, give or take. And we are joined in progress. We start with a match from Houston, the Iron Sheik against Mr. Wrestling 2. And Mr. Wrestling 2 wins with a great big knee lift. It's funny, you know, to talk about people in 1982 who still look good. The Iron Sheik is moving really well. The Iron Sheik hasn't gotten to the WWF yet. He's still in Atlanta. So this is like a Bill Watts buries the wrestlers on the Superstation kind of thing. And Watts does talk about, you know, we've seen Dick Murdoch and the Iron Sheik on Atlanta TV and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's sold throughout as our guy can beat their guy, which again, you know, those of you that listen to the show know that Bill Watts does this a lot. Usually he does it with the Southwest wrestlers. Later on, he'll do it with the WWF wrestlers. And, you know, he'll do it with world-class wrestlers. But this is the era where Atlanta is creeping into everybody's backyard, at least with the cable. And so, you know, you're trying to do whatever you can to make sure that people know that your wrestlers are really the best, not those guys that you're seeing on cable on the Superstation. Next up, we start the studio matches with Kendo Nagasaki again. This time he's got Akbar with him, and he is wrestling Ron Ellis. And again, a very quick match, wins with a thrust kick to the throat, or the super kick. Nice move. And, you know, again, for all my complaints about Kendo Nagasaki not being Kabuki, he is better than Mr. Ito, and where we'll end up at the end of the year. He's not a bad worker. I have to say that. I have to give credit where credit's due. So next up, Bill Watts starts the show, but now we cut back to Boy Pearson. Hacksaw Duggan is there with him on color commentary. And this is where I said, you know, Duggan is basically playing a tweener here. He's still doing voiceovers of his old matches. They talk about Chavo Guerrero. They talk about Tony Atlas. And Hacksaw is still, you know, there's a little bit of sort of the anti-Mexican racism here. There's a little bit of, I forget if this is where he says something else again about Tony Atlas, but there's still, he's still playing a heel. You know, he's still talking up his 1982 heel stuff, his feud with Chavo, his feud with Atlas. But again, we're sort of recapping for a reason. And in this one, you know, as we talked about last time, or when we saw the match, Chavo, you know, ducks out of the spear, Duggan hits the post, Chavo responds with a sunset flip, gets the pin, Duggan is livid, but then Duggan's much more excited to show us the clip from quote-unquote the next day, which I think was taped the same day in Shreveport in December, as Atlas fights Duggan, and we've seen this match as well. Duggan ends up winning with that chain mail hat weapon hood thing. That was a good spear, you know, we'll say that much. And so again, you know, Duggan is, they throw in some stuff about Akbar, they throw in some stuff about when Ted gets back, they talk about, we'll see next week, and we'll get to it next week, where Duggan starts to talk about his family and his family situation and how, why he supports America. It's really, really this, you know, week by week, subtle turn. And, you know, obviously, you know what has to happen for it to be complete. And we'll get to that in just a few weeks. Next up is the tag team match. It's a non-title match. Two and Conway against DiBiase and Bourne. I would say the match of the month, really good. Tiger is really good in this match. You know, again, like for all my complaints about Tiger Conway Jr., sometimes. He's actually, you know, with the right opponent, with the right crowd, he's a big favorite in certain places, you know, like Houston, where his dad was a big favorite as well. And so in certain situations, he can look really good. You know, he's not smooth. I don't love his moveset all the time, but, you know, this is not a bad team, and we'll get to it. But really, if you think about it, this is a tag team that only exists for about 6 weeks. Like, you know, DiBiase is going to go on a tour of Japan in a few weeks. Almost literally the day before he leaves, they drop the titles to Two and Conway. And when he gets back, he and Mr. Olympia team up and win the titles back. So it's like, all right, we need to do something while Ted is in All Japan. So next up is an interview with Two and Tiger. And they talk again about the stuff that's going on, and they show the clip where Two confronts Mr. Olympia. They have the suitcase, they're talking about the things in the suitcase, and the fact that we figured out that the suitcase that has all this Mr. Wrestling 2 paraphernalia is actually Mr. Olympia's. And so I thought it was, you know, again, this could have played out much quicker, but they're really slowing it down. They're doing it week by week. They're doing it episodic. We'll see. Olympia's not even on the next TV taping. So they're going to keep him away from Wrestling 2 for a little bit. Obviously, we're going to get to the North American title tournament, and some of you guys know what happens there. But next up, we have Marty Lundy and Mr. Olympia, and Olympia wins with the sleeper hold. And then we get an interview with Olympia and Bill Watts. And Olympia has now been, they show the clip. It happened before the episode where Two chases Olympia out of the babyface dressing room. And you get a really good look at the facility in Shreveport and sort of how it's set up, because they're upstairs in the dressing room. And you see them come out, and Two is backing Olympia out of the dressing room, yelling at him, pointing a finger at him with his old man, angry Two voice. He backs him down the stairs. They come all the way down. It's like, it's a little bit of a process to get from the dressing room in the Irish McNeil to the ring area. So they come downstairs, and now they're in front of the fans. And it's funny because you can kind of hear the fans as they're expressing anger towards Olympia and support of Two. And this is where I said, you know, I think people have figured it out, because it seems like the fans are right with it. It seems like the fans, as soon as they see this happen, they seem to jump on the bandwagon with Two and start to like, yeah, you get him, Two. You take care of him. So it ends up with the suitcase breaking open and all this stuff spilling out. And when it does, Olympia tries to bend down and pick the stuff up and put it back into the suitcase really quickly, like sweep it under the rug, right? Well, of course, when he's down leaning over, what does that lead to? Wrestling 2 just whacks him with the knee lift, and Olympia sells, and then later on, he does this interview, and he's like, he's crazy, Bill Watts. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's insane. Something's happened to Mr. Wrestling 2. This is not the Mr. Wrestling 2 we knew. I don't know what's going on. I don't have anything to do with this. I don't know where the stuff came from. And, you know, Bill Watts starts to like pivot on Olympia. He's a little on the fence, but he's starting to turn on Olympia. But that's your suitcase, right? Well, yeah, it's my suitcase, Bill, but I don't know how that stuff got in there. You know, I went out to my car or to the bathroom or whatever, and I came back, and, you know, now it's open. Somebody opened my suitcase, put this stuff in there, left this for Two to find. I've been set up. And, you know, like I said, it's very interesting. And then Bill Watts gives a world according to Bill Watts during the match, I guess, in which he talks about torture. And it's, if you've ever wanted to hear, you know, an extended rant by Bill Watts about torture, here we go, episode 183. And what he says is that, you know, physical torture is hard. Physical torture, you know, can break a person's body. But what's even worse is the mental stuff. And he gives this example. I forget, obviously it wasn't Iraq in 2004, but it was like, you know, something in the 70s, maybe it was Vietnam or maybe it was World War II that he was talking about back in, you know, obviously not the 70s. Maybe it was Korea. I forget what the example was now. I wish I'd written it down, but it was like, you know, and what this proved, Boyd, was that, you know, a strong man can survive physical torture, but everybody is vulnerable to having their mind broken down by mental torture. And that's what somebody's been doing to Mr. Wrestling too. They've been trying to break him down with torture. So like I said, if you've ever wanted Bill Watts' thoughts on torture and how to torture somebody, here you go. And then we leave with Kelly Kaniski and Ron Kessler versus Art Cruz and Tim Horner. And I believe that goes to the time limit as well. It's interesting. There's another world, according to Bill Watts, in which he talks about the best athletes and how everybody is coming to the Mid-South area. There's a North American title tournament coming up and everybody wants to be a part of it. And I love when bookers do this, when there's a big tournament and you get new people coming in. That's a great booking technique. So coming in, Super Destroyer, Killer Brooks, King Kong Bundy. It's funny, they talk about Tony Atlas coming back, and Tony is still being talked about. They show the stuff, obviously, Tony Atlas and Duggan. They're going to show the Kamala body slamming Andre stuff again, which is a Tony Atlas, Andre the Giant tag team. But the interesting thing is that Tony Atlas leaves Mid-South at the end of February. And he goes to Georgia for, you know, a few months, and then he ends up in the, you know, back in the WWF. And they don't, you know, Duggan won a couple of matches with Atlas, but by and large, it just, you know, Junkyard Dog's back, Tiger Conway's here, they're bringing Butch Reed in. Like I said, they almost literally trade Butch Reed for Tony Atlas. And it's really quiet. We don't job him out. He doesn't lose a lot of matches. There's not a big production. He doesn't lose a loser leave town. There's no injury. Just suddenly one day we stop talking about Tony Atlas, or to the extent that we talk about him, it's, you know, the feud with Duggan. But anyway, he's gone at this point, except that he's still a little bit on the TV. So we will see that coming up. And then they talk about that we're going to see the Chavo Guerrero and Nick Bockwinkel match from Houston, Texas in a couple of weeks. And I think you guys know that's one of my favorite matches ever. And one of my big, I love Chavo Guerrero, I love Nick Bockwinkel type of matches. So that is coming up in a few weeks as well. So that's episode 183, episode 184. Now we're 2 weeks later in the tapings. We are 316. 1983. And I should mention, the previous two episodes had Jack Curtis as the ring announcer and not Reeser Bowden. And as campy and making fun of and too good for the situation as Reeser can be, you know, tongue in cheek about it, Jack Curtis has like no emotion. He's got like no, he's got a voice for television and a face for radio, right? Like, he's not a great announcer. And, you know, I know he's just filling in, but it's like his passion for this seems lacking. So it's actually nice to have Reeser back after a couple of weeks. So as I said, we do recap the Andre and Tony Atlas versus the Rat Pack stuff. We talk about how Akbar has been fined, and he talks about how it's a gag rule and he's being censored. And then we get a little information about new Mid-South Tag Team Champs, as Mr. Wrestling 2 and Tiger Conway Jr. have won the titles March 11th in Houston. And like I said, DiBiase literally leaves like 2 or 3 days later to go to Japan. He's only there for 2 weeks, but they decided to switch us out. He does lose, as we find out, a loser leave town match to Junkyard Dog. And that actually happened March 12th in Tulsa. So, very quick loser leave town. I don't know if it was like a 30-day thing or just a loser leave town for 2 weeks, or they just loser leave town. I don't know. They didn't do it around the horn. They just did it in Tulsa right before he leaves. But they do mention it on TV, and they will talk for the next couple of weeks about when DiBiase gets back, blah, 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 blah. And then the other thing about that is that the, you know, the match in Houston, okay, here we go again. It's a little sloppy. It's the winning move is a victory roll by Tiger, but he doesn't hook the leg and the referee is out of position. And so really what the winning move ends up being is Tiger sitting on Matt Bourne's face. And I won't go into an R-rated description of it. Those of you that know, know. And those of you that don't, I'm not going to put that image in your mind. But it just, because he doesn't hook the leg, Matt Bourne's not trying to kick out. It's not a stunner of a move. It's supposed to be, you know, the baby face gets a surprise pin. But, you know, he's just sitting there on top of Bourne. And, you know, Wrestling 2 is with DiBiase, keeping DiBiase out. So that makes sense. But the referee jumps back in and, you know, counts this pin pretty quick. And it's like, it didn't look great. It just doesn't look great. There's, you know, like I said, it's 2 and Tiger are a little bit like the Fantastics debut. And everybody remembers how popular the Fantastics are in 85 and then in 86. But in 84, they're kind of looked at as Rock and Roll Express substitute. And they don't get over. And one of the reasons they don't get over is they don't really look good on TV yet. They don't have finishing maneuvers. I think the first time they're on, and we'll talk about this in a year, but the first time they come on, they win with like a body slam. You know, it's sort of a missed move. And I that's kind of happening to Tiger here a little bit. You know, we're supposed to be excited about him. He's a Houston guy. We now have a partnership with Houston. He's a good guy. People like his dad, but he's not looking great on TV. And as we know, as we've talked about, he's here just, it ends up being like 3 or 4 months, but on TV, it feels like about 6 weeks. Anyway, next up, we have a live match as Kamala wrestles Marty Lundy. And Bill Watts, again, talks a little bit about the savage Kamala and how he's clearly going on instinct. He doesn't know a lot of wrestling moves, but he's just, he has this fighting instinct and it just, I don't know. You know, it's all the good and all the bad of Kamala rolled up into one, I guess you would say. It's a great gimmick in a way, and it's an awful gimmick in a way. You know what I mean? Anyway, in the meantime, he's also talking about how unusual it is that Marty Lundy, you know, normally we see Marty Lundy against the good guys, but now they're taking this guy who's a little tougher, put him up against Kamala to see what happens. And, you know, nothing different happens. It's basically the same kind of Kamala squash match. 2 splashes and we're out. But that leads us to a recap with the Andre interview. Watts again talking about how scared he was. I love, of all the things Bill Watts does in this era, I love the way he sells this interview with Andre about how big Andre is and how strong Andre is, how he's never seen Andre that angry, how even he was scared of Andre and how he wouldn't want to be Kamala when they meet at the Superdome and, you know, parenthetically, every place else around the horn for the next 2 weeks or for that 2 weeks as we have it. Next up, we have Matt Bourne against the Junkyard Dog. Guess who is leaving town soon? Can you guess? Have you guys guessed yet? He's no longer our tag team champion, and he is getting the Bob Orton treatment. So it's a good match. It's interesting that Junkyard Dog wins with a Russian leg sweep. You know, I actually thought it was a nice finishing sequence where, you know, Dog, like, Bourne tries something, Dog ducks it, gets the Russian leg sweep, and, you know, again, for people that think that Dog wasn't ever a good worker, I think you're mistaken. He actually is pretty good with his move set in this era. And yeah, I mean, they're pushing him as this great, big, unbeatable guy who's winning quick matches. But, you know, that's not different from what they do with Magnum TA or what they do with Al Perez or what they do with Bill Goldberg. You know, they, the royal they, so to speak. All right, so now they bring up the ninja. Oh, and I should mention that the ninja gets in the ring at the beginning of the Junkyard Dog and Matt Bourne match. And he does, again, like this stare down with weapons kind of thing. And he's, you know, twirling the kendo stick and Dog is swinging the chain. And so for, you know, we're getting this standoff of these two people. So next up, we have the Ninja and the Golden Dragon, otherwise known as the Magic Dragon. Really good worker, tragic death as he was on his honeymoon. And they wrestle Cruz and Horner, and obviously they win with a thrust. In this case, it lays out Art Cruz. It's interesting that the Dragon is just here, I think, for this TV taping. But anyway, he looks good. He doesn't quite look his gimmick. He's wearing a mask, and he's got like sort of a ponytail out the back. And, you know, it almost looks like, you know, the Orient Express with, what's his name? Paul Diamond, you know, wearing a mask and pretending to be Asian. But obviously it's not. But again, I mean, for what he is and his wrestling skill set, I think Magic Dragon's really good. And it's just a shame that we didn't get to see more from him in America or Japan. Obviously, tragic in terms of the way that he died. So next up, we have Bill Irwin and Joe Stark. And it was funny, I was just thinking, like, oh, Bill Irwin's here. I wonder if Scott Irwin's here. So we're about to get that as well, as you guys know. And they talk about how we've seen Bill Irwin before when he was a rookie and he was losing a lot of matches. And so then we get this world, according to Bill Watts, about how guys improve and how sometimes guys come through. We saw that with Junkyard Dog back in the day. We see that with guys like Buddy Landell, or we saw Ted DiBiase when he was a rookie. So we saw Bill Irwin when he was a rookie, but now he's coming up in the world. He's got some wins on World Class. You've seen him, you know, some of you have seen him win some matches in other federations. He's really starting to put things together, and he's looking pretty good. And I like Bill Irwin. I actually really think that he deserved better in WCW in the early 90s and in the WWF in the mid 90s. But he was really talented. And, you know, I feel bad in that he probably was a guy that would have gone farther had his brother lived, you know, because they were great as the Super Destroyers, and then they were great as the Long Riders. And, you know, I don't think of Bill Irwin as like, you know, like Bill Watts thought of Hector Guerrero, but on some level, his career just doesn't quite get there in terms of what you would like. And he's a really good worker. He looks the part. He looks great. And, you know, I didn't know that he was a hockey player, but to me, the goon stuff was like way out of character, even if it really wasn't. Anyway, he looks good here. He wins with a... I say that, and then I wrote down sloppy backbreaker for the finish. And it's just not crisp. It just doesn't look like it's a devastating finisher. But the foot, he actually does a really great leaping foot to the face. So maybe that should have been the finisher. Next up, we have Hacksaw Duggan and Super Destroyer against Mike Jackson and Randy Barber. You guys know how much I love this, right? Like, I mean, it's one thing just to have Mike Jackson on the program, but to have Randy Barber with him, you know, together as a tag team, and getting annihilated by Duggan and Super D. So there's Hacksaw Duggan talk. This is the world according to Hacksaw Duggan, according to Bill Watts. So they're talking a little bit about Akbar and how Duggan doesn't like him, and why would DiBiase be associated with him. And, you know, we've already seen like a big Duggan interview. And actually in the interview, he stresses that he was fighting against Tony Atlas and Chavo. And sometimes Akbar was there, right? Like sometimes Akbar and Kamala are there, as in, you know, when he's fighting with, you know, like I said, when he's fighting with Chavo, and then when he's fighting with Tony Atlas, and the whole Tony Atlas thing is a big angle that involves Kamala. And, you know, obviously the tag team match where both Duggan and Kamala get involved. So at this point, Duggan sort of sets the record straight, and then Watts reemphasizes at the end of the program that, you know, Duggan is still Duggan. He's a wild man. He's crazy. He was kicked out of the NFL. He's a bruiser. He's a brawler. But the one thing that he doesn't like is Skandar Akbar, and he's not talking about it yet. He says, you know, I don't want to talk about it. It's a family situation. There is a reason I don't like Akbar and the people that he hangs out with, like that Iranian, but it's personal. I'm not going to talk about it. But meanwhile, every single week, he's getting more and more cheers. And you can literally see, especially like with Duggan and Super Destroyer against, you know, two enhancement guys, the crowd really likes them. And, you know, we'll see it again, actually, coming up next week. So they win. First, there's a spear, and then there's a superplex on Randy Barber. And, you know, what are you going to do? But I love, like I said, that Mike Jackson and Randy Barber are here as a tag team. I read somebody was talking about the other day how Randy Barber wrestled the Road Warriors, like, and I'm making this number up, but like 12 times in their first month in Georgia or something like that. And I was like, ooh, now do Mike Jackson. Please do Mike Jackson. Because again, as you guys know, Mike and Randy, Mike himself, Mike and Rick Rude, like those are the guys that are, you know, the enhancement guys when the Road Warriors come up and when the Midnight Express come up in this era. And I just think it's really cool. And I give a hat tip to them for getting these guys over. So that is episode 184. Just one more episode to go this month. Episode 185. Again, recorded 316 in Shreveport. We get a little shout out to Buddy Nichols, K-A-L-B. And even though Bill Watts is the color commentator on this episode, we do get a little Buddy Nichols report. And it's about Andre the Giant and how Andre the Giant came and, you know, visited town and how exciting it was for everybody in Buddy Nichols is in Lake Charles, right? I should know this. It's not right in front of me, but how exciting it was for Lake Charles when Andre the Giant comes to town. And, you know, I always amplify and echo John McAdams' statement about what was so cool about wrestling is, you know, John Elway or Tony Dorsett or Roger Staubach or Michael Jordan or Larry Bird not coming to your high school gym. But Andre the Giant might be coming to your high school gym. You know, whoever the champion is, whoever's your champion, Bob Backlund or Harley Race or Ric Flair or Nick Bockwinkel or the Junkyard Dog or Ted DiBiase might be coming to your high school gym, might be coming to your elementary school, might be coming to your National Guard Armory. And that was the cool thing about territory wrestling. You could see the big stars from television in your hometown and, you know, in some cases, once a week, every week, every Friday night in Decatur, as the case may be. All right. So after that, we get another Jim Duggan talk. And he talks about his deep personal reasons for disliking Akbar. But then we see the Tony Atlas versus Kamala match from Houston, February 25th. And Tony is counted out. And again, Duggan is like, I just want you to know I did this because I hate Tony Atlas. This has nothing to do with me being involved with Skandar Akbar. But as I said, I really think that Duggan is acting like a tweener here. You know, I don't necessarily think that this is, you know, Jim Neidhart changing clothes in a closet because he can't be in either dressing room yet. But I really think that, you know, the writing is on the wall. And as we talk about in just a minute, there's quite a lot of cheers for Duggan in certain sections of the crowd at this point. Next, we get a recap of Mr. Wrestling 2 versus Olympia. And again, Bill Watts is like, he's very much talking about it. You know, oh, now we know. At first, Olympia denied it, but now we've seen. And I'm not quite sure what, you know, maybe it's happening in the local promos for the next matches, or maybe he's alluding to something that we're going to see next week. But it's not quite clear to me. And like I said, Olympia is actually not at this TV taping, which is a very interesting way of keeping it going, keeping the suspense building, but we don't have this final resolution yet. We're going to get it pretty quick, as you guys know. That sounds like the Fletch joke, you know? He died so suddenly. Oh, he was sick for years. Yes, but the end was very sudden. So, you know, after 5 months, we're finally going to get some resolution pretty quickly, I guess is what I meant. Next up, we got Kendo Nagasaki against Mike Jackson. Good match. Ends with the thrust kick to the throat. Next, we get Junkyard Dog and the Golden Dragon. And this is a really good match. And again, really good JYD match. Something happens in this match that Bill Watts loves, absolutely loves. So a week previous, the Dragon does a backflip, and then, you know, like his opponent is in the turnbuckles. He backflips away and then charges, and I forget if he thrusts or chops, but, you know, it's like a backflip and then back into a move, right? Well, in this case, he does the backflip, and when he does, Junkyard Dog just wallops him. Like, as soon as he lands, Dog is there with a clothesline, and it's a great clothesline. It does sort of come out of nowhere. It's a really smart thing to do, and Bill Watts is right there to let us know that it's a really smart thing to do. And he says, JYD must have been scouting this guy last week, quote unquote. And he knew what to do. He saw that move. He scouted that move. He knew what to do when that move came up, and look what he did. And then, of course, that leads to the thump and the pin, and that's more or less what we get of the Magic Dragon. But good match. Really good match. And like I said, the crowd is so into the Junkyard Dog this month. It's like they have their guy back. And you know, again, I mean, for those of us that didn't know if putting a mask on him qualified as him going away, from a crowd perspective, it really does seem to have worked. They do again do the weapon showdown at the beginning of the match, and this time Nagasaki adds like a little puff of green mist to the showdown. And like I said, they're still talking about it in the next match, which is Super Destroyer and Joe Stark. And really, like I said, Watts is just really impressed by the Junkyard Dog's moveset and the way he used his head to do this against the Dragon. Super Destroyer wins with a superplex on Joe Stark. There are so many cheers at this point for him, and I don't know if it's because they've seen him on the Superstation, or it's because we haven't clearly established him as a face or a heel at this point, or it's just that the superplex is so incredibly awesome in early 1983 that it's like, wow, what did we just see? But like I said, there's a lot of people jumping up and down and cheering when Super Destroyer gets this win. Next up, we have Duggan and Bourne against Mr. Wrestling 2 and Tiger Conway Jr. It's a non-title match. And it's interesting that Super Destroyer is there. As we know, Ted DiBiase is away. They don't tell us he's in Japan. They just, you know, he's on vacation. He's on a forced vacation. And it's a good match. You know, maybe a step down from the previous match, but this is more angle. As, you know, Matt Bourne has Mr. Wrestling 2 down, and DiBiase goes for the spear, but two moves. Bourne gets the spear. He does a really great sell job on the spear to put it over. Two knee drops Duggan to get out of the way. Then knee drops Bourne to get the win. And at that point, Duggan is really upset. And I think we go to a commercial break, and when we come back, they say something just happened in the ring that was really disgusting. And they kind of give it the AWA spin. And what happens in the ring post-match is that Duggan and Bourne square off. They start to fight. Super Destroyer comes in the ring. He helps Duggan. He holds Bourne so that Bourne gets speared again by Duggan. Then he gives Bourne the superplex. And Duggan does an interview. And, you know, it's like, all right, here's something. Here's a twist. It's not the twist we were expecting, is it? Right? Like, the crowd, when they turn on Bourne, is really into it. And by the end, they seem a little squeamish because these two guys have really double-teamed Bourne and put the boots to him, so to speak. And Bourne, to his credit, sells it well. It takes it like a man, and, you know, he is just about out of town. He'll lose a couple of matches. He'll be on the tournament. I think he might even be on the Superdome show in mid-March. And then, obviously, he is off to Atlanta. I was looking at his cage match stuff just to see how long he lasts in Atlanta. And it's longer than you would expect. You know, it's 3 or 4 months. I mean, they're, you know, being positioned as the top tag team, Bourne and Anderson. And obviously we know he gets into trouble, he gets arrested, and lo and behold, the Road Warriors are created as a result. So we're out of time, but you know, it's a good month. It's really setting the stage for what's about to happen, but it feels like a lot of change after somewhat stagnant January and February. You know, we're cranking back up. We're getting ready to run the second half of the Rat Pack era feuds, so to speak. And you guys know what that's going to lead to. It's a great deal of fun. We're on the verge of a lot of new wrestlers in the territory. We're on the verge of a lot of new angles in the spring and, you know, a lot of turns. And we'll just leave it there in terms of what's coming up next month. But those of you that are fans of Mid-South Wrestling know it starts to be a good time again as we get into March and April in 1983 of the Mid-South Wrestling Association. Now, as we wind up, I just want to revisit something from many, 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 many moons ago. And that is the Houston, Texas Gold Cup. Somebody sent me a message, and a hat tip to you. I apologize. I could not find the message today to give you credit by name. But what was pointed out to me was that Wrestling Data has an entire listing of the Gold Cup that Cage Match did not have. So when I was looking at the listings, I saw this full day of Gold Cup activities. Just to go back real quickly for those of you that didn't listen to that show. Back in 1981, Houston Wrestling runs a 3-day event, tournament slash celebration of the quote unquote 50 years of Paul Bosch being involved with Houston Wrestling. So this is 1981. Obviously, he's hearkening back to getting his start there in the 1930s as a wrestler. He becomes the announcer, really, when TV starts in 1949. He buys the territory, or the city, however you want to frame it, in 1967 from Morris Siegel's widow. And now, 20 years after that, 15 years after that, he's celebrating 50 years of Houston wrestling. And it's a 3-day thing. There's going to be a Gold Cup. And the Gold Cup is going to go to the best wrestler in Houston. And so they bring in Vern Gagne, and they bring in Wahoo McDaniel, and they bring in Nick Bockwinkle, and they bring in, you know, they're affiliated with Southwest at this time. So there's Gino, and there's Tully, and there's Tito Santana, and Tiger Conway. Ken Patera is there. Gene Kaniski comes in. And when I read through it the first time, it was a little confusing because Cage Match has 2 days worth of events listed. And then on the third day, they only listed Tito Santana beat Nick Bockwinkel for the Gold Cup. And then 2 weeks later or a month later, they wrestle again for Tito's Gold Cup and Tito wins. And then they come back again at the end of the year and they wrestle for Bockwinkel's AWA title. And I believe they go to a draw. Not right in front of me, but I've been trying to get some clarification. I even offered to do like a cameo with Tito if he would talk about it. And we never got there because he didn't quite remember that era of wrestling, as you can imagine, for somebody that's had, you know, thousands and thousands of matches over 30 years. He doesn't necessarily remember one weekend in 1981. But in any event, somebody reached out to me and told me that Wrestling Data actually has a full card listed for the third day of the Gold Cup. So here's what they list. And I'm just going to go in order. I'm not entirely sure, but they do list it this way. So they had a 12-man battle royal, and Santana won by beating Dos Caras, Gene Kaniski, Gina Hernandez, Ken Patera, Manny Fernandez, Mike Graham, Nick Bockwinkle, Tiger Conway Jr., Tom Pritchard, Tully Blanchard, and Vern Gagne. All right. So here's where this starts to seem like more of a tournament again. So what I was told previously was that the first day was like the first couple of days was like a double elimination round robin. And so apparently the third day you get to the actual tournament format. So round three, Gina Hernandez defeated Dos Karras by countout. Tiger Conway Jr. defeated Manny Fernandez. Tully Blanchard defeated Mike Graham. Vern Gagne defeated Gene Kaniski. That'd be a fun match, even if it was 1981. Ken Butera defeated Tom Pritchard. And Tito Santana beat Nick Bockwinkel. So that match we thought was the finals, but it actually turns out that's the third round match. So the first, I guess first day was first round, second day was second round. And now the people that have not been eliminated compete in a tournament format on the third day. All right, round four. Gina Hernandez defeats Tiger Conway Jr. Tully Blanchard defeats Vern Gagne by disqualification. Tito Santana beats Ken Patera by disqualification. And did we lose somebody? No, because there were six people. There were six matches in round three, and now we have three matches in round four. I don't understand why people can't figure out tournament brackets. That's a long-standing pet peeve. You guys know that. All right, semifinals. Tito Santana beats Tully Blanchard. And then, I guess, because there's only three, maybe they flipped a coin. Gino got the bye into the finals. And in the finals, in 4 minutes, Tito Santana beat Gina Hernandez to win the Gold Cup. So I'm taking that as gospel. Like, that's kind of the, you know, I mean, the rounds and the order of the matches seem pretty clear, right? Very different than what I thought it was on the last day, but a lot more exciting, actually, in some ways. I mean, it would have been fun to just have like a convention, and I thought it was just one match that day, but it turns out they had a full card that day, the third day of the Gold Cup celebration. And as we know, Tito Santana came out with the victory. So pretty cool. Thank you. I apologize again that your name's not right in front of me, but thank you to my listeners. I love when you guys engage with me on answering some of my questions from the past. As you guys know, I came of age in wrestling at 12 when I started watching the WWF and then Southwest and then Mid-South. And actually, when we get to the next Mid-South, the April 1983, that will be where I came in. So I am so looking forward to that. We'll do that in a couple of episodes from now. Next episode, very special episode. And I'm kind of on the fence. Do I want to talk about the beginning of Junkyard Dog's career? Or do I want to talk about the Dallas-Houston wrestling wars of the 1950s? And I've been doing so much research on both from my newspapers.com account. And I have to think about what I want, which way I want to go. I ultimately will do both episodes, so don't worry about that. But I'm just going to think a little bit and do some research and see which one is a little easier to put together for next time. In the meantime, we will keep going with Mid-South. And as I said, I'm so grateful to you guys for reaching out, for engaging with me about old school wrestling talk, and most particularly for those of you guys who have bought any of my books. Thank you so much. It's not easy to be a creative person in this world at this time, even with social media, even with, you know, the gatekeepers having less of a say in who is and who isn't allowed to make art. It's hard to be an independent artist and to sell your own stuff online. And I am by no means the best seller of things, and I am by no means the best self-promoter of things. But I love that we are sort of working together to document wrestling history. And I love that you guys are supporting my art in the meantime. So thank you so much for buying my books. Two plays by Greg Klein, Sunset Painting and The Sun, is now available on Amazon or directly autographed from me. I've got PayPal and Cash App. And as you guys know, I also wrote the book about the Junkyard Dog, the King of New Orleans. And my first work of fiction, The Paper Tigers. Story about when Ty Cobb climbed up into the stands and nearly killed a crippled fan. So thank you guys. They're all available on Amazon. And as I said, I love talking wrestling with you guys. We will be back in a couple of weeks to do it again. But in the meantime, this has been episode 42, two every season. And we'll get to the turn as we come up on next month. This has been Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk. Thank you guys for listening. I will see you next time.